The way you like to push the crowd. Your red shirt. The way you wear your hair. Baby, I wanna be there. Yeah, I wanna be there. Sideways glance to catch you when you dance. Your feet will hardly touch the ground. Your mouth will hardly make a sound. Know me for a while. You'd see a change in your style. You know me for my deeds alone. You know me for my smile and my tone.
Ronald, there are lots of galleries in New York, in fact, hundreds. What do you think are the aims of the Ronald Feldman Gallery? What are you particularly trying to achieve, would you say?
I think, not to be glib, but that my main goal is to show good art. And I estimate that there are about 200 exhibitions of art in New York every 5 weeks. So that it's a competitive event to attract an audience and some attention to what you're doing. And my intentions are to attract an audience that's interested in quality art, one not necessarily saleable, although it would be wonderful if it is, and art that has a depth to it. not slick, not easy to take in with one look. And because I feel that the quality of ideas, the quality of handling work today is very rich, and that the one-line joke, the one-second instant opinion is not really something that we should tolerate or one that we should set our sights on. I think that there's so much more going on, so that I think it takes an extra amount of time to look at an exhibition in our galleries.
Is there a particular area of work that you're interested in showing?
I don't think that there's a particular area. I think that in a general sense, I'm interested in art that covers a richer turf, a larger context, an expansion, something that's not art about art, but something that's philosophy, science, politics, poetry, philosophy, anything that could be multifaceted, interdisciplinary in some way, that artists are working with that material and are making the transformations through art, with art, making art with that kind of material. I think that's where we stand now. I can't see any reason why art as decoration, art for couches, art for living rooms, art for museum walls is something that we have to be tied down to. I just think that those days are over. They're certainly over for the artist that I'm working with. If it works in another kind of space, if you can take it home, and it's fine. But I think it's really a secondary goal. The first thing is to be able to integrate information that is rich, has depth to it, well-researched, that kind of thing, into art. And I don't care what it is, as long as I feel that it has some type of response in me. And in this case, I use something that Arakawa has been speaking about for many years, that I need it. And I think everyone's needs are different, but I go on what I need. And I think that that's the way we should think about art. Do I need that? I don't mean need to own it. I mean need it, that it exists in the world, that it's interesting to have it.
Yes, I mean, you seem to be talking about or describing an art that, in fact, is engaged with people's lives, an art that is to do with the sort of social fabric almost, or cultural fabric, economic fabric, rather than an art that's rarefied, detached, and separated out from everyone's daily experience. I mean, at the moment you've got an exhibition to do with geographical locations and maps, and soon you're going to be showing Margaret Harrison and Les Levine, whose work is very much concerned with issues that are pertinent to people outside the art community and so on. I mean, that would seem to be one thread that draws this sort of work together.
I think there's a paradox in what you said a second ago, that this is the kind of work that we need, that touches people's lives and so on. That's a paradox, because it isn't ivory tower art, yet some of the more simplistic art, which has no effect on people's lives whatsoever, is an art that's easier to understand. And so it would appear in many instances that an art that has a more difficult but richer content is an art that seems to be more removed from people's lives, when in fact it is the one that's mostly engaged. So I think this is a paradox, and I think slowly we're learning to live with that and learning to get into the work and spend more time with it. I think that's what's going to happen. Hopeful that it will.
How long have you had a gallery in New York?
Well, it's about 9 years now, almost 10.
And what would you say the feeling is in New York amongst people who run galleries? I mean, is there a feeling of confidence because of the sort of economic climate, which is certainly affecting European kind of attitudes and so on? I mean, is New York avoiding or escaping that? I mean, is there a feeling of confidence here?
There's a great feeling of confidence, and New York has been expanding like crazy. Where we're sitting now in Soho, and this is about the last block of Soho, and still an audience comes. They see, you know, endless amount of shows in New York. I wonder about what will happen when we have a recession, which is certainly upon us coming. I think there'll be a shakeout, and it's very hard to hang on during this period. But I think there's a great deal of confidence among gallery owners. For myself, I have a great deal of confidence in art, and I have a great deal of confidence in the quality of ideas that I see. It does seem politically that we're bankrupt. It seems that the West is bankrupt politically. But through art and through the creative and imaginative people that I'm meeting all over the world, I would say that we're on the verge of an incredible moment that's not at all understood by politicians, for sure, and the general public. And I think that the despair that I experience when I travel and that I find in some parts of the United States is one that's legitimate and real, but I still feel that the vibrancy, the life, the underground life is still of such a high quality that we were in for many pleasant and good surprises. Anyway, I hope so, and I hope that's where I'm working.
You seem to be sort of showing a number of European artists now. I mean, what interests you about the art taking place in Europe at the moment?
Well, I'm interested in art in Europe and art in the United States, art anywhere that seems to be broad-based, as I said before. And I find in Europe that there is a very creative strain, a good moment of things going on. And I find that European curators are among the first to recognize what's happening, even in the United States. Still, they're very supportive. The governments are still supportive of art. And I can't see any reason why we should be provincial here and show only art that's bred here. But art is also interesting here, and I think these connections around the world, I find things happening simultaneously everywhere, and I personally don't care where it comes from. I don't care at all. But if you're, from my view, European artists are creative and producing at a very high level today, and so I think we have every, we must show it. I mean, I couldn't see, I would be, I think, only partially fulfilled if I was showing only art that I saw in the United States. And I see men and women working in Europe also, which is very, very exciting.
I was talking to Les Levine about a particular problem yesterday which exists in England, which is a rather destructive kind of polarization between painters and people, critics who advocate painting, and artists and critics who are more interested in the broader areas and integrating their work more into wider and broader audiences. I mean, does this sort of polarization exist in New York?
I think we have people who are dedicated to one particular thing, particularly to painting. I've always thought this to be a red herring. I just don't pay any attention to this at all. Painting is alive and well if there are good painters. And I think what we have to look at in painting, what I look at in painting, is content. If the content is in a painting, a real strong level of it, then the painting's healthy and okay. And if it's in a videotape, then that's okay too. If it's in anything, I think that's the only issue. Painting is one option, and I think what we have in this country, particularly, is our group of critics, and possibly curators, who feel very romantically, sentimentally attached to painting as the great poetic vehicle, and I really don't feel that at all. I can't see why that would be limited to that painting. And so we have a show like the Barbara Rose show that we had, this incredibly awful attempt to capture the 80s and to slant this narrow view of what's happening in the United States. That kind of thing exists, but I think it's very very narrow, very parochial, and of course it's a very provincial view, and it's certainly not a real survey of what's taking place in the United States or in Europe. It's just ridiculous.
Just the way in which New York seems to operate is encouraging from the point of view of an artist. I mean, this is an observation from someone who's just come in, on the basis that there seems to be a much higher level of public interest in contemporary art than, say, one would witness in England, where, you know, contemporary art is treated with a lot of suspicion. I mean, would you say there is a high level of this interest in New York? I mean, would you endorse that observation?
Well, I think the closer you get to the fringe of anything, then the audience is probably a little bit smaller. But still, one thing I can guarantee an artist is not necessarily sales, but always an audience. I can guarantee them that some kind of audience will develop for their work not because I can personally bring them in, but because there's a large enough audience and someone will be attracted to their work. They'll begin to have a dialogue with the world. And I think that New York, at this particular moment in history, this time, is that place where you can guarantee some type of public. If the economy turns down, the one thing we'll still have is an audience. There's just no question. And I think that speaks very well for the audience, for the dynamics of this particular place.
Is there an upward trend in galleries opening or expanding? Because you've opened this new downtown gallery, in fact, recently.
Well, I've been expanding and contracting continually when I think the needs are there. But I must say, I play it closer to the vest than it might appear. I'm very aware of economics. I would not want to be stuck with enormous overhead as the economy turns down. And I think that now we have an expansion period, which may be coming to an end, and we may have many galleries closing. I think one thing that people find they can do without, unfortunately, they think they can do without, is buying young, inexperienced art or untested art. Sort of seems to be a gambling instinct, and they will withdraw from it when the economy turns against them. So I think that a lot of the expansion has taken place during good years, and we'll probably have a contraction. But still, it's going to be lively. There's no way that it's going to contract so that there isn't going to be a lively art scene in New York. There's too much push behind it, too much energy. But still, many galleries will close. There's absolutely no question. How many, I don't know.
Well, one only has to look at the ad pages and Art Forum to feel that there is some sort of confidence and work being sold and galleries being maintained and so on. You know?
Well, I think Art Forum is a particular case at this moment. All the art magazines have a lot of advertising. Art Forum has just gone through a change of management. It's a little background New York music. We've had a change of management and ownership, and I think it's going to be an expansive magazine, open to all kinds of ideas. It's really a great opportunity, I think. So, and I think that the confidence you find there is the fact that the support system in the art world, the galleries particularly who spend money to advertise, feel that there is an open mind at Art Forum, and I think at all the magazines at this point, really, but Art Forum now at this moment. So I think that you sort of back that structure. You know, there's always this question of whether you're advertising because the magazines are supporting your artists and writing articles, or you're advertising to attract an audience and so on. And I think that you, most cases in this country, you get an honest shake that way.
I'm seeing Ingrid Sishi on Monday, but I was going to ask her, and I'll ask you, you've, I think, partly answered it, that the recent issues of Art Forum are obviously very different to the ones that one has been used to seeing. And would you say that the attitude that seems to be coming through Art Forum is reflective of a general attitude in New York about being interested in a much broader spectrum of art and ideas? Because in the past, Art Forum seemed to dwell on American painting a lot, but of course the recent issues are very much more open, in fact.
Well, I couldn't speak for Ingrid or anyone else that's doing it, obviously. For myself, I think it's a recognition, one that is very timely, that there's a big mix, a lot of things going on, and a lot of exciting things going on, and it isn't limited to some type of formal statement or some type of formal painting or a minimal this or something that or an American bread, anything. It just is more open. And I think that will become a very important forum for this. I don't know what Ingrid would say. I've only spoken to Ingrid very few times, but all the vibes that one gets are like that.
Although it seems that there's an incredible confidence at the moment, just how fragile is the economic structure, and how do you think this is affecting things at the moment?
But it's very fragile. The whole thing finally looks wonderful, and it is wonderful. The quality of everything's fantastic, but it's not as strong economically as it appears.
There has been criticism in the past about American art being exported, particularly in the 60s, to Europe in large quantities, and the term sort of cultural imperialism has come up. I mean, how do you think you would face that same attitude with the sort of art you're interested in if you wanted to show it in Europe?
I think that this perhaps goes hand in hand with the reputation of the United States outside its borders, where it is considered imperialistic, economically so, particularly. And I think that spilled over into the art area when we were certainly exporting in a certain way contemporary art and ideas in the cultural area. I hope now, where this the art world is so divorced from that, really, I hope now that there won't we won't run into a brick wall in Europe where this wonderful dialogue has started and been very rich. I hope now that we won't run into it and we'll find that Europe is closed to American ideas or the ideas of young American artists. For myself, I'm very interested in what's happening in Europe, and I can see similarities in Europe and the United States, and I think this dialogue is absolutely essential. And I hope that it won't be viewed that this is some type of American plot to export and to prolong the life of its economic imperialism, because the two are definitely not related. Matter of fact, they're quite could be construed as quite the opposite. And so for myself, I think that there has been some reevaluation now in Europe, and we don't face that always. As a matter of fact, some of the most receptive minds that I'm running into are European for the art that we're showing, and I hope this will continue.
Do you think that is in part due to the fact that the kind of art that you're interested in and shows isn't specifically linked into an economic structure, i.e. it isn't work that is selling automatically, so in a sense it avoids the economic imperialist charge because it isn't work made for galleries in the first instance, maybe?
I don't know. I think there's probably some of that involved in it, but I think that if you're just interested in living now, this minute, the time allotted to you, then your mind is going to be open, and I think you can recognize that a good idea is a good idea, and a good effort is a good effort, and it doesn't matter where it comes from. And so there might be prejudices in this country against the communist countries, let's say, and still if artists are working there that are doing good work, it would be absolutely incredible. Crazy to say this isn't good work or this isn't interesting. It would be absolutely lunatic. And I think that the wiser heads in Europe and in this country are certainly of one mind to keep this exchange open. So I don't know why. I can't say that a particular kind of art we're showing is not particularly saleable. I'm trying like hell to sell it so that we can pay all the bills. But I know that the artists are making it with a mind that somehow they'll be able to survive on their art.
I understand that artist space is what is described here as an alternative space. Could you describe what the function of an alternative space is in New York, first of all, but then perhaps say what the function of artist space is particularly or specifically?
Well, there's a great deal of discussion about what alternative spaces are and should be, however, what that means, an alternative to what, and we consider that this is a space, artist space in particular is a space that is alternative to the established systems, and that means museums and commercial or private galleries. So, and there are other spaces that interpret that term differently and then function differently. However, we try to provide an opportunity, especially for emerging or developing artists, to show their work to an interested audience, provide a context that's professional, giving it adequate support, proper exposure, that has credibility and has established some interest in the art community, especially, and then the audience is beginning to broaden. So what we try to do is present the best new art, to put it simply, and to accommodate that art, whatever is necessary, since we're not concerned with selling or clients or a particular audience to please. We make sure that it's the artist's interest that we're looking after, and if they're doing a type of work that requires some difficult equipment or procedures or construction, then that's made available to them.
How are alternative spaces funded?
Most are funded similarly, and ours is funded by the National Endowment for the Arts and the New York State Council for the Arts, and increasingly by foundations that are interested, the Jerome Foundation, others that take a particular interest in culture or arts or young artists in particular. And now some individuals are beginning to make donations, and that's how we hope to continue to survive, you know.
Yeah. What is the procedure then for artists if they want to show in an alternative space? I mean, how do they go about it in New York?
Well, as you know, there are such a large number of artists in New York, and they all need exhibitions. That's the most important thing professionally to a young artist, especially. And they have a great deal of difficulty getting shows. Our spaces and spaces like it are much more available to artists. That is, they can come in, bring slides, talk to someone here. We have a slide file that we use as a reference to find shows or individual artists, and other people use it as well. However, there's no way to come in and demand and insist on an exhibition. You just hope that people respond to you at the time that you want the response. We see every artist that comes in. However, not every artist that comes in has a show.
Would you favor any particular sort of work? I mean, is there a gallery policy, or is it very broad?
Well, I wouldn't say it was very broad. However, there is a gallery policy that's general, which is if the work can be easily and well accommodated in, say, the commercial gallery system, and that system is showing, galleries are showing work of similar sort, or if it's work that we've seen for years and years, a similar work to what we see, there's really no reason to show it here. It's not going to provide new information, add anything to the dialogue, give the artists an opportunity that they couldn't arrange for themselves in a more conventional location. So essentially, when we're talking about new art, that means sometimes difficult forms and new materials and new ideas and a lot of flexibility. So we have no policy against any particular kind of art, but it's likely that we would show less painting or less formal sculpture than other types of art.
How many artists, say, in the course of a year would approach artist space here, you know, for an exhibition?
Oh, I have no way of knowing it. I'm several a day, and we see many of them, and I'm trying to think of a way to there is a certain kind of a system of seeing artists or learning about artists that would be appropriate for this space, or them learning about us. So there's a good deal of contact that is direct. Someone phones that I know and says they know of somebody, they tell me about someone that's very interesting. That process is probably the most active one, and I think everyone knows about it. It's kind of over the back fence, word of mouth. And I hear through other artists and other people who's doing what. And then there's also a general traffic of people coming in that decide they'd like a show here. But they don't necessarily know what we do that well or are especially interested in this space. And that's what I think we're most interested in, the other, when someone has a particular reason for wanting to show here as opposed to somewhere else.
Are there any particular or specific differences, say, between artist space and the other alternative spaces that exist in New York?
Yes, I would think there are quite specific differences beyond that, which can just identify each space as having a slightly different orientation. We only show artists who are not represented by galleries, never showing an artist who's had a great deal of exposure in New York. We only show young artists or new art. There's no variation on that, and we show all forms of art. There is no other space that has a regular exhibition program that includes film, video, performance, plus, you know, gallery exhibitions, and uses all the formats available. So I think we probably are the only one to do that regularly.
To what extent do you actually go out and look for artists and make shows around a theme, maybe, as opposed to making shows up out of artists who apply to you?
Well, it's a little hard to explain the distinction. We don't actually go out looking for a way to find a theme, you know, or having a theme in advance and looking for artists to put in our theme. Since we have so much contact with artists, we have service programs where we give small grants to artists, so we know who everyone's working on and what projects they're involved in. And when something begins to be very dominant and active, like suddenly hundreds of artists are working in Super 8 film, then we put together a Super 8 film series or program. So it's not that the artist and the art dictates what our shows are going to be, so we never are out looking it's the reverse sense. The things suggest themselves, I think.
Do you actually ever initiate new work by, say, funding artists to make works? And once they are actually having an exhibition, do you support any of the costs or meet any of the costs involved?
We have several different programs, a number of them, which we call our service programs, and we give thousands of dollars each year that we receive from the NEA and private foundations to artists for specifically to do their work for planned exhibitions, already scheduled exhibitions elsewhere. And also we give funds to artists to plan their own exhibitions outside of our space, and we give them several hundred dollars each for publicity and lights and, you know, the usual basic costs of exhibiting work. That we do regularly. That has really very little to do with exactly what's shown at Artist Space. At Artist Space, we have fees that we give to each artist that shows here, in addition to covering all their, you know, publicity costs and mailings, that sort of thing, transportation. And we also have a fund that a foundation has generously given us to help them with materials. If they have heavy or unusual costs for materials in preparing their work for an exhibition, we are able to help them somewhat.
Is a fee commonplace for artists showing in alternative spaces, and could you say how much that fee is?
Well, it's a very moderate fee. No, it isn't commonplace except for performance artists and film screenings. We decided to essentially set a precedent for this, and in doing, since we show at least five artists a month and plus all sorts of series in between and performances, that adds up to quite a number of artists and quite a lot of money. So we have a base level fee of $50 for every artist. Now, when certain artists do have complicated projects, then we add to that fee with material assistance. However, and some artists, you know, very little materials and actual costs for the show are involved, and most live in New York, so there's very little, you know, travel expense, all of that. So we give every artist $50, and then for performances and films, we give higher fees, and often we provide more to certain artists.
Avalanche appeared from the 28th of October 1970 until August of 1976. And we had 8 issues of the magazine, and on the masthead my designation is publisher. And I considered myself more really the publisher than the editor. Besides being the publisher, I was also the designer, and the design of the magazine was as important as the fact that it was designed the way it was, in my mind, made it the physical art object, carrier of information that it is. And there were 8 magazines, and then it went into a newspaper phase, and it was called Avalanche Newspaper. So when it did that, I moved away from the assignation as publisher to the term artist in residence. And I felt at that point that my attitude towards what I was creating was more as a kind of visiting hand, a shaping hand. The editorial premise of Avalanche was to allow individual artists to create their own context in which to demonstrate their work, in the same way that this audio work is a similar forum, an open space for an artist or an individual to impregnate his sensibility into that form. And we didn't want to have writers the way Art Forum, the current major magazine up until the publishing of Avalanche, worked, was to ask writers to write on, let's just say Joseph Albers or Robert Motherwell or Barnett Newman. They never went to Barnett Newman or Albers or Motherwell, really, to get what they wanted. They went and assigned a writer, an art writer, who wasn't making very much money and not really too not a very good writer, really, to write a piece. And it was interesting because of the visual information, essentially, that were any magazine, I feel, is essentially interesting because of its visual information. I read literally hundreds of magazines a day, and in a week I go every day or every second or third day to all of the newsstands and magazine shops and bookstores in the neighborhood and literally read hundreds of magazines. I stay there for 4 or 5 hours and read everything through all of the international press. At any rate, what I read is essentially the visual imagery, and if there's something there that catches my eye on visual imagery, and my principal interest is now telecommunications, if there's something on telecommunications, then I stop and I read it. And consequently, I feel that I have a pretty good coverage of what's happening in publishing. Part of the reason to do Avalanche really was to bring European art or bring the consciousness of certain European artists to the United States. The art form had never published an article on a European artist, and the other press didn't either. So the American public was really ignorant of all of that work, which I had come to know and to some extent love from 57 to 70. Of course, the artists that were the most interesting in 1970 were not the ones that I had met in the 50s or the 60s. They were Richard Long and John Dibbitz and all the Italians and I suppose Danielle Buren and Haka and Bruce McLean and I don't know, a wide different range of artists. I suppose if I had met other ones, I would have liked and done work with. I think I realized increasingly that what I was doing with Avalanche was historically viable.
What was the distribution when you ceased publication?
We printed 5,000 of the first issue with Joseph Beuys on the cover. We printed 6,800 of the second issue with Bruce Nauman on the cover. And we cut back a little bit sometimes to about 4,000 for the rest of the 8 issues of Avalanche. And then we started with about 4,000 or 5,000 of the newspaper and continued that on till the end. But the newspaper wasn't as the magazine went to bookstores and the newspaper couldn't. And it was geared more to newsstand and we couldn't... And the profit was less on the newspaper. We cut the price back from $2 for the magazine to, I think it was 75 cents for the first newspaper, and there wasn't enough money there. I was offered $40,000 by Michael Goldstein, who owned the Soho Weekly, to bring out Avalanche as a twice-a-year supplement, and I refused. He sold Soho Weekly to the current owners for $600,000. Willoughby Sharp. Hi, Larry. I'm right in the middle of an interview now. What can I do? No. I'm going to go see Percy Sledge at the Mud Club around midnight, and some Canadian friends are coming over. So if you want to do that, give me a call around 11:30, and we'll go over. Yeah. Talk to you later, Larry. Bye. Yeah, well, I'll just say in the interview that Larry Bush, my audio engineer, called just to check out what the story was, right? Okay, bye. Avalanche was a step in print, and I saw what I could do with print. And we've dabbled with video, and I see what we can do with video. And a very important thing was the satellite interconnect in 1977, where we did the first satellite two-way NASA-sponsored, FCC-approved, $10,000 three-day transmission with the Hermes CTS satellite, which is jointly owned by the Canadian government and the United States government. And we had about 300 people working on that project, which has essentially communicated about a dozen artists who were in the NASA Ames Mount View, California studio, Terry Fox and Alan Skarad and Sharon Grace and Carl Loeffler and a few other people there, and a group of about 30 of us at the Lower Manhattan Battery Park landfill area. And we interconnected that with American Laser 761 units, which was the first time that a satellite signal had been driven upstream on a cable interconnect in Manhattan. In New York City, and people on the cable network of Manhattan Cable Teleprompter in New York, maybe 250,000 potential viewers could see our program, and then in California, Viticon 22 and 24 cable stations, another X number of thousands of people could see.
It's obvious that New York is a very intense city, and you seem to thrive and to live very much in relation to all this activity going on. I mean, how would you describe New York at this moment in time? What, April 1980?
I would say I would liken New York in the 80s to a Berlin in the teens and the early 20s. There's also a decadence and an edge of drugs and heroin and danger and a kind of live today, don't care about tomorrow, that's very pervasive and very destructive and something that I'm old enough to want to avoid. Most of these people, one boy, Hal Ludeker, he said, the wispy kind of beauty that I have is only going to last for 2 years, and he meant he was going to be alive for 2 years. As that's his prime, and a lot of people feel that way. There's a transience and a here today, gone tomorrow, which makes the recording and the documenting and the getting these tapes and videotapes so essential, because it doesn't last two seasons. It's not going to be like this next year. People don't know how short life is. And the creative instinct. You know, I think that this is just this is a very important part time in the creative life of New York. And it's not gonna last. It's gonna go into another stage. Most of the really interesting people are 21, 22, 23, 24. If someone's 25 or 26, they're already a little old. If they haven't made their statement, if they don't stand for something as creative individuals and artists, they are worried. It's like the Jewish princess that isn't married by 30. Her parents are going to, you know, have her commit suicide or something. There is that in this culture. And it's very exciting because that means everyone is pushing themselves to the limit and with very little means. No money, no grease. It's push. Everything that gets sent out in the mail, you have to get that 15 cents from someplace, get that envelope, get it together, put the stamp on the envelope, and get that stamp into a mailbox, man. And that is not easy. If you want to deal with a substantial number of people to keep your survival quotient there. And most people can't do that. They don't, you know, they haven't got the facility to do that. The reason Avalanche, to go back to your first topic of conversation, the reason Avalanche was started was because there was so much printed information coming to me. So much was happening that no one was taking any notice of. That no one was going to, that the press wasn't writing about, that I felt that I was morally incumbent to do something with all this information that was coming to me. And that's why we decided to do it, because we saw that there was this tremendous, tremendous body of work that no one knew anything about. So we decided to follow it up, pick up the phone, and ask that artist what he was doing, and then give him space and amplify that. I'm getting ready for a new wave. I'm getting ready for a communication system that is going to make everything that's happened redundant. It'll all be photographed and filed on microfiche and stored away in a national archive on a computer. And anytime anyone wants it, they can just type in Carl Andre and they'll get all of his announcements from all of his life. That information will be available, because it's all going to be available, and it's going to be available through the telephone lines over the short period that are connected to the TV set. And that's the key to the future.